in every kind of relationship that we can have. So another quote that I repeat all the time when I talk about relationships is from Deepak Chopra, "You are the love you find." And that is such an important thing to also keep in mind, to think of the relationships you have as being a mirror for where you're at with yourself. So I'm just going to begin by just reading you. I've made a ton of different notes. Some of it kind of follows in a linear way, and then I tend to go off on tangents, so I probably won't even get through what I've done here. But if something doesn't make sense, or if you feel like I'm off track, just say, I don't know where you're going, or what's happening here, okay? So, I believe in love. I mean, I believe in real love. Romantic love, the mystery of love, beauty of love. I believe in that kind of love. And I don't think that most of us reach the potential of connection and intimacy that you probably desire or could possibly have. I don't think, in general, that we fight hard enough for the kind of love that we want. I don't think that we hold on to it long enough sometimes or invest in it enough in a way that reflects the kind of true intimacy and connection that we long for. I think we get used to stuff we don't like, and then I think we start tolerating it. I think we endure it. I think we start blaming other people for it. We resent it. And over time, love dwindles. And we usually don't even notice it happening, just kind of starts trickling away when little erosions happen between people. And then complacency and disappointment prevail, and secretly we wish it could all be different, but we sometimes even give up thinking about the idea that something amazing, something really beautiful and intimate could be possible. So the other thing is, and now I'm going to blame everyone, including myself, is that most of us aren't willing to change. We're not willing to do what's necessary within ourselves to make real intimacy, real connection possible. To change ourselves, to become a version of ourselves that is actually ready for love, committed to love, and willing to be vulnerable and open to looking at our own personal contributions to what is preventing intimacy or destroying it in your life, love takes a ton of courage. I've been thinking a lot about courage lately. Some of you have probably read Daring Hungry. Greatly, sorry, just escaped me. And I think that's a lot about courage and the importance of courage. And love requires courage. Scary kind of courage. The kind of courage that makes us jump way far outside of our comfort zones. So I'm going to share with you a quote by Anna Sinin. "Love never dies a natural death. It dies because we don't know how to replenish its source. It dies of blindness and errors and betrayals. It dies of illness and wounds. It dies of weariness, of witherings, of tarnishings. Most everyone's hearts, in fact, I can say everyone's hearts, have been injured. No one gets through this world unscathed. So when you're thinking about your hurt, you can be guaranteed that every single person beside you has had some version of that hurt. And we're injured again and again. From the earliest stages of love. And that's the first love between a parent and a child. And as amazing as everyone wants to be as a parent, you don't always show up in the exact moment your child needs you. You don't always say the perfect thing. You don't always give them the smile in the exact moment they're looking for it. And those are the little tiny hurts. Those are the little ones that start early on. And that's when we're on the infant end of that, that's when we start learning about the limits of love. That's when we start learning that it's not going to be perfect and it's going to hurt. And then we start having more hurts from our siblings, from our friends, from our teachers, from all sorts of people that we get involved with. And to make matters even tougher, we don't just carry our own history of injuries. I don't know how many of you have heard about the idea of the transgenerational transmission of trauma, but we actually carry the hurt of our ancestors. And this has actually been proven in research now. Did anyone read that study that was done by Harvard with the mice? Does anyone know? Okay, I don't have like the exact, I'm not gonna give you the exact stats or the exact thing, but basically I'm gonna give you the essence of what they found out. What they found out was that they did a study on mice, and so here's the parent mice, and let's say they heard a sound that was a reasonable sound, a pleasing sound, but it was paired with a very negative stimulus. So they developed an aversion to the sound because when the sound occurred, this negative thing would also happen. Then, of course, when they started just making the sound, they would feel the trauma as if the negative thing was happening when it wasn't, because they now associated the negative experience with the sound. Okay, well, we all know about that. The interesting thing is that when these mice had children, those children had the fear of the sound without ever being exposed to the negative stimulus. So what they're actually showing is evidence that we carry injuries from the past. We carry trauma. So children of survivors, and it doesn't even have to be as serious as that. It can be all kinds of traumas, but what we know is that actually we are changed on a cellular level when people are hurt profoundly. So I'm talking about hurt on every level. I'm talking about the hurt that happens on an interpersonal level between people, and I'm also talking about the hurt that happens transgenerationally. There's nothing we could have done about it. That's just part of life. So people disappoint us. They hurt us, they injure our hearts and our spirits. And because of this, what do? We develop defense mechanisms, strategies to cope. And this is problematic. And the reason it's problematic is because the defense mechanisms that we develop, the way we learn to cope, we develop that when we're about 5. Generally, you don't have the best resources to figure out how to solve problems. And that's when our personalities are laid down, usually by the time we're 5. So if I grew up in a house where I had to learn how to deal with, I don't know, people who were screaming or people who were fighting or things like that, I learned how to deal with it when I was 5. That's when I first started figuring out, okay, maybe my strategy was to hide and go read in my room. Maybe someone else's strategy was to get involved in the fight. Whatever their strategy was, that's when it got started. And generally, they're not good strategies. And so what happens is, when we're adults, even though we've had years of experience and we've had opportunities to develop other ways of dealing with things than some of the things we were doing when we were 5, when we get into vulnerable, challenging moments in our relationships, when we get into conflict, we go back to the default position of what we know the best. And those are usually the strategies that we developed when we were little. So the other thing is that when we feel hurt by what someone's doing, we also go back to every past hurt that we've ever known. So in the moment that I'm hurt, in the moment that I feel rejected, I'm feeling almost every rejection I've ever experienced. So the person who is possibly making me feel rejected, I am now responding to them and 100 hertz. So you can imagine that when we're in difficult moments, we are so compounded with so many feelings and so many experiences that our best self is not coming to the table. We're either acting like a little kid inside, or we're acting from a history of, you know, people will say, well, I can't help it, I was abandoned, or I can't help it because, you know, my parents are divorced, or, you know, whatever we decide we're going to blame it on. These are things that we carry with us, and they come up at the most inopportune times, and they wreak havoc on our lives. So, you know, we also learn how to cope by watching significant others in our lives. So we learned from our parents or maybe older siblings. We saw how they did things. Usually also not the best strategies. And we draw on these things, and then we expect ourselves to be able to cope in a reasonable, rational way with adult relationships. Not easy to do. So I want you to take a moment, and I want you to think. How did people solve problems in your family? Did they yell? Did they give the silent treatment? What did they do? What was like a common theme in your family? Just think about that. And maybe each of your parents or siblings or whatever, they had different ways of doing that. But just think about it for a second. And then I want you to think, so when they were doing that, what was I doing? Was I scared? Was I hurt? Did I do it too? What was happening inside of you? And I want you to now think about how many of those things, either that you were doing or they were doing, that you are doing now. And just think about that. I know sometimes when I'm in a bad situation, I'll respond to somebody and I'll be like, sounds a lot like my mom. I don't want to sound like my mom. Why is that coming out of my mouth now? Not that my mom's not a wonderful person, but I want to sound like me. And that sounds like something that she would say, and not necessarily a reflection of how I want to handle things. And most of us aren't really that willing to look at ourselves critically. And when I say critically, I say that cautiously, because I don't want you walking around beating yourselves up. I want you to be curious. I want you to be really, really curious. Why did I do that? Or why in that situation did I sound like my father? Why in that situation am I whining like my sister? Why am I doing that? We want curiosity because curiosity is a safe place to explore the possibility of change. Criticism, which most of us walk around in our heads going, negative things, that was dumb, why did I do that? I can't believe I screwed up again. That's more the kind of thing that most people walk around with in their heads. We don't want that because that's not going to encourage change. That's telling you that you're not capable of change. Curiosity is interest. Maybe I could do it different sometime. If I'm thinking about this with wonder, maybe I could think of a different way to do it because I'm willing to give space to some ideas. Now I want you to think about some other things, just to reflect on some qualities that might be driving some mistakes that you make. Do you need immediate gratification? And I want you to really pause when I ask you this, because a lot of times, like I'll often think that I'm patient until I'm on the phone with like Bell Canada or something. And then I go, well, there's obviously a limit to this. And I think that most of us at least have places where we're not tolerant of space, where we're not able to be patient. So that's when we're in a really infantile state. Because that's how babies are, right? Babies need to feel better right away, or they're going to make a fuss. So some of us, and rarely do we want to admit it, want to punish the people who upset us. It's very common. We don't even realize that we're doing it. We don't even realize sometimes when we've just lashed out or said that hurtful thing. But when we're hurt, we often want to hurt back. We want to punish. So I want you to be mindful of that. And maybe, though, you're a person that tends to go into apology mode. You just want to clear the air. You want to make the tension go away. You're the peacekeeper. And you do that because you can't tolerate disconnection. And so you want to make the problem go away that's creating space between you and the other person. Except the problem with that approach is that you can't solve problems if you're not willing to tolerate tension. Because if we immediately run into repair, we're not really repairing the problem. We're just making the pain go away, which kind of goes back to immediate gratification if you think about it. So now I want you to think about this. What bothers you the most when you think about your parents or your caretakers? What's the things that stand out to you and you think, oh, that really bugs me, or when I was growing up, that was the worst, or that kind of thing. Just think about that for a moment. And again, I want you to think, when you do that, when is that something that happens or comes out of your mouth or is something that you would do too? And then I want you to ask yourself even something a little more difficult. When have you done that thing that you don't like? When have you done that to somebody you care about? And when you did it, did you take the time or the interest to notice how it impacted them? How they responded? How they felt? We affect people way more than we realize. We don't realize how much power we have. We don't realize that a look the wrong way, a smile that doesn't appear when someone walks in the door, those are the things that start to erode relationships. You know, I've had people come into my office and they'll just say sometimes the simplest things. Like if I say, well, how did you know when your relationship was going south? Well, I don't know. We stopped saying goodbye to each other in the morning. Could be something as simple as that. And it happens slowly and silently, and then no one talks about it. And it just continues and it grows. So, who were you in your family? Were you the life of the party? Were you the troublemaker? Were you invisible? And now I want you to ask yourself why you took on that role. Why do you think you decided that was going to be your strategy? That was going to be your response to the family that you lived in? And now I want you to think, because for sure you're still playing that role. You're probably playing it with your friends. You're probably playing it in your family. And I want you to think about the impact of that role, that you took on. I want you to think about the impact of that role and the role that that has on the people around you. If I'm the life of the party, then how does my friends get to shine? How does my partner get to shine if I'm the life of the party? So it might be a beautiful thing. It's beautiful to be engaging and vivacious and know how to make people laugh and have a good time. But that also has an impact on everyone around you. And you have to be mindful. Am I making enough space for other people? And I'm just using that like one type of way of being as an example. If you're the problem solver, if you're the one who's always taking over and fixing everything, what are you saying to other people about their ability to cope? Are you respecting them? Are you honoring them? You know, it's really interesting if you go to 12-step programs, you're not allowed to give advice. You're not allowed to give advice to the other people in the group. It's disempowering. So, you know, you have to really think about why you do what you do and the impact it's having on other people. Because there's things that all of us do that negatively impact our relationships. And the acknowledgement of whatever your weaknesses are, that's going to be the first step to repairing your relationships. You have to be willing to look at yourself, or there's no chance you're going to have a better relationship. There is not one couple I have ever seen in my practice in 20 years that have ever come in and said, the problem is me. They come in and they say, the problem is you. Even if people are taking responsibility for a mistake that they've made, they'll still say, but I did it because so-and-so did this. The problem is never me. It's always someone else. If we're coming from there, no change is going to happen. When I see couples in my practice, I focus on one thing. You tell me what you do, and you tell me what you do. I don't want you to tell me what he does, and I don't want you to tell me what she does. I want you to tell me what you do. Because you're the only person you can change. And when you change, he or she is going to change too. So, self-truth and truth to others is where we fall short. Truth is the most important thing. It doesn't mean that we always speak it, because sometimes it can be hurtful and sometimes people aren't ready to hear it. And I'm a huge proponent of the idea that you should never speak where you won't be heard. It's like absolutely should be a rule for your speech. If someone is not able to hear your message, don't say it. You know, a lot of times I'm dealing with parents of adolescents, and they're going, I told him not to do this. And I'm like, and he didn't listen. Right, so why do you continue to tell him? He's not going to listen to you. He is an adolescent. He's telling you he's in charge of himself. He's going to make his own ideas. He's going to do what he wants to do. And you're not being listened to. So why are you speaking? All that's happening is you're in a power struggle. And he's showing you that you're not the boss of him. So keep going. It's not going to get you anywhere. This is a common problem that parents have. But it also happens in our intimate relationships. We're always telling the other person what they're doing wrong. Even through not speaking, we do it by ignoring. We do it by walking out of the room at a moment when a certain comment is being made. We do all kinds of things to display our hostility. So, healing and repair take a lot of time. And meaningful healing and repair require truth, but deep truth requires courage, compassion, and personal responsibility. Most things eventually can be communicated with the right language, but it has to be gentle language, it has to be compassionate language, and it has to be a way of talking that takes into consideration who the other person is, how the other person feels, and always thinking how the other person is going to receive your message. And that message needs to be delivered from a place of, I'm feeling upset. I'm feeling upset because I felt like you ignored me the other day. And perhaps you were upset with me, and I'm interested to know what that might have been about, but I need to let you know how it affected me, because I don't think you intended to hurt me. Really important to err on giving people the benefit of the doubt. when we're communicating and trying to repair something. The one thing that can never happen and tends to happen a lot is we hit below the belt. And when we're angry, unless there's an issue of safety at hand, if you're not going to be able to speak to the person, I don't care whether it's your child, I don't care if it's your partner, I don't care whoever it is, if you're not able to communicate what you have to say in a respectful way, I ask you not to speak until you're able to. And this is something that's very challenging, because when we get triggered, when we get heated, and when we get frustrated, we feel like we have permission to lose it. And the worse another person behaves, the more we feel we have permission to lose it on them. And if someone is behaving in a really, really bad way, what we know 100% for sure is that they are hurt and scared. So now you are losing it on a person who is hurt and scared. This is a bad combo. It's not something that we want to do. So we want to take a step back. We want to think, if I'm in a problem, if something's going wrong in my relationship, I want to be able to first look at myself and think, what have I done here to contribute to this? This was actually a really big thing for me this year, because I was realizing that there were certain people in my life that I was complaining about a lot, that they were bothering me. And if I told anybody the things that they were doing, they'd say, oh my gosh, no wonder, that's so annoying, or that's so disrespectful, or that's so this. And then it was actually through Yom Kippur, I don't know how many of you go to this shul, but Rabbi Hawk was talking about how we needed our plan. We needed a plan to think about what we were going to do better this year, how we were going to be better people this year, how we wanted to improve ourselves. And I thought to myself, I need to stop complaining about these people in my life. Some of them were very close people to me, people that I care about a lot. So maybe the problem isn't actually that they're doing these things. Maybe the problem is I don't have great boundaries. I need to work on my boundaries. Because if somebody's rambling on, and I'm sitting there enduring it, I shouldn't be complaining about the fact that they're doing that. I should say, you know what, I'm really sorry. I know this seems important to you, but I need to go. And I need to set boundaries. And so I've been practicing that. And on day one after Yom Kippur, I failed. I blew it. I complained about someone. And I went, wow, it's not easy to change. Even with all my knowledge and all my background and all the stuff that I do to reflect and to be curious about myself and all those things, I still, in 24 hours, could not sustain this change. This is really important. Rabbi Abraham Twersky said, it would be easier to read the entire Talmud than to change one single character trait. So I want you to think about that, because in a way I'm asking you to look deeply at yourselves, to think about what you're contributing to the challenges that you have in your life, the problems in your relationships. But at the same time, I'm telling you, it's not going to be easy to change. And that's where the courage comes in, perseverance and discipline. All hard things, but all things that are necessary. If we want to find really deep love, if we want to find really deep connection, the person we have to change is ourselves. We have to figure out, what is it that is standing in my way from me being more present in my relationships, more vulnerable in my relationships, more loving in my relationships? Imagine if every day when we were engaging with people who are important to us, we were reflecting on those things. Imagine how much differently we would show up in those relationships if we were taking ourselves that seriously and thinking about the impact that we have in such a profound way. just before we started our talk today, I was standing over there, and I have a couple of my close friends are here. And I was looking at them, and I was thinking, I am so lucky to have these amazing people in my life. And I told them. And I was thinking, I never do that. Why don't I do that? And so I'm bringing this up because in every moment, I'm trying to think, what could I be doing better? What could I be doing better to create more connection, more closeness, more understanding, more trust? Sorry, I went way off. Oh, this very common thing that we do. We create a false self. We all have them. We all have masks that we put on in different situations. So I might put on a different mask at work than I put on at home, but we all create these versions of false selves. And we do this, and this is something, again, that probably started when we were like less than five, where we started learning that in certain situations, the way that we feel we are for real would not be acceptable. I should be stronger, I should be prettier, I should be whatever I should be, and we start making accommodations. Like, I can't go out unless I put my lipstick on. So, you know, just different things that we do because we think that the self we're going to bring forward is not an acceptable self. So I'm not saying that if you wear lipstick, you're a false self, but I'm just saying that we do things to be different from who we are in order to be acceptable to other people. In really intimate relationships, there's no place for a false self. In really intimate relationships, that's where we have to take a chance and take that veil down and say, this is who I am really. This is what I'm afraid of. This is what you do that scares me. And I'm not saying that to be critical. I'm saying that because you need to know how you impact me. And so that is part of a major ingredient to build connection, to be real, to be truthful, to be vulnerable. And that all takes courage. And we maybe take little chances sometimes. You know, a lot of times people will come in with a broken heart for therapy and they'll say, I trusted him. What a mistake I made. Might have been a mistake, but not the mistake you're thinking. Because probably, maybe you didn't put up the right boundaries. Maybe you took a chance on somebody without really looking at who you were dealing with, and you didn't make sure that the person was safe before you revealed yourself. And maybe you got intimate too quickly. Maybe, I don't know, there could be any number of things that happen. But we have to take a look at how we contributed to the breakdown or how we made a wrong choice of something or someone to get involved with. Today, someone came in and she was really, really upset because she had just had a big success in her life in something, and she didn't feel that her friends were properly celebrating her success. And I said, did you tell them? Well, no, but they knew it was happening. I said, well, you think that they remembered? Well, yeah, because I was talking about it for weeks. And I said, okay, but what would have happened if you'd called up your friend Sue and said, you won't believe it. It happened. What would have happened? Well, she would have been really happy for me. So I said, well, maybe you need to put yourself out there a little more. Maybe you have to give people the benefit of the doubt and know that they would be excited for you because they care about you, but maybe you weren't in that moment top of mind. And that's not because they don't love you, it's just because they have other things going on in their life. So these are just different ways of thinking about what happens and thinking about what we may have done to contribute to not getting what we wanted in a moment that we wanted it. So I may have talked about this a little bit the last time about that we're all on a continuum, and this is a continuum of self-blame and blaming others. And in some situations, we self-blame, and in some situations, we may blame others, but most of us err on one side of that continuum or the other. I'm a self-blamer, generally, because, I mean, here I am preaching to you about how we have to take responsibility for things, so I'm always going, what did I do, what did I do, what did I do? But the blaming others is like when I'm complaining, right? So I do both. And we all do both in different situations. But blame doesn't belong anywhere. I just want you to always think in terms of personal responsibility. And also trusting that the other person has to take responsibility for their behavior. So I'm just going to ask you some direct questions about this. Do you blame others for the current circumstances in your life or in your relationships? Because one of the most common things I hear is, if only he or if only she, then everything would be better. So that's a myth. Those are myths we tell ourselves. And they cause problems. Now here's a totally different kind of question. Do you rely on your connections to provide you with a sense of self-worth? Is your self-worth coming from, I feel good about me because I feel good about how I live my life, I feel good about how I treat other people, I feel good about the contribution I make? Or do you feel good about you because you do this job, because you have these friends, because you do these, you have this house, this whatever? What is it that makes you feel good about you? Because if you feel good about you because you like how you're living your life, because you like the contribution you're making, because you like how you're treating other people, that's sustainable. The other stuff is not sustainable. The other stuff is fragile. The other stuff is not self-esteem. Self-esteem is an essential foundation for being able to function well in a relationship. Because if your partner says something hurtful, but your self-esteem is intact, they aren't going to damage you the same way that they are if you're vulnerable and you're dependent on that connection for your sense of self-worth.
Sorry, can you just tell me the two, what are the self-esteem that works and what is the things that don't? I didn't understand
so
the difference between those.
What works is more your opinion of yourself. That's what works. So how I treat people, do I feel like I'm a decent human being? Do I feel like I'm trustworthy? Do I feel like I'm honest? Do I like the things I do with my time? Do I feel like I make a contribution that's meaningful to me? Those would be things that you have control over and that you can fix and that are, they're solid. And if you come up against them and you think, I don't feel good about these things, you can fix them. You can say, well, then I want to do something that feels like a better contribution, or I'm going to be more generous, or I'm going to be kinder, or I'm going to be whatever. But if you're dependent on other things in your life that are external to you, possessions, friend, like somebody, like if this person's my friend, or if that person's, you know, those kinds of things, then you're going to be vulnerable. And when people do things, it's going to cut you down at the knees because you're not going to have the resilience to be able to tolerate the injury. Does that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I want you to ask yourself this. Do I speak truth to the important people in my life? Or do I maneuver my communications to get the results that I want? So this is something I haven't talked about yet. But a big thing that goes wrong in relationships is manipulation. If I do this, then he'll do that. if I do this, then this will happen. That way of being, we all do it in certain circumstances. You know, like I think of little things. Well, I'm not going to let them know that I bought the shoes because I really want to buy the purse, and I can't buy the purse if he knows that I bought the shoes. Like, these are like silly little things that happen, right? And a lot of times we do these things like, we do them. This doesn't happen at this table. No. Okay, I want everyone to know, this table is immune from this. But these are things that we all do.
Upside down.
I think
we do
the
most.
Right?
Yeah. We do these things, and you know what? They're often happening privately in our minds. In fact, we do them within ourselves. We kind of like rationalize things. And I heard recently, I actually think it was somebody said it here, that rationalize is rational lies. I really like that. Rational lies. That's pretty powerful, right? So, I think that's what we do with ourselves, and we manipulate other people. We rationalize to ourselves and we manipulate other people. That's not truth. That's not courageous. So I'm going to use the silly example that I said. What would happen if we said, I bought these shoes and I know you're going to think that they're expensive, but there's also this purse that I really want and I think I'm going to buy that too. And I know that you're going to freak out at me, but I can deal with it.
Not at this point. All this stuff is not applicable.
Nothing that I've said is applicable to this table. Okay. So these are all things to be curious about with yourself. You know, when I'm putting together talks like this or thinking about these things, I start noticing when I'm doing them and I'm going, wow, I can't believe I just did that. That's not honest. That's not truthful. It's really amazing the way we operate with all these little mini microcosms of things that go on in our heads of how we're going to make things work. And nobody knows that this is happening, but it's going on all the time. So, so I just want you to think about that a lot, because you're going to be amazed, like probably tomorrow, you're going to walk through your day and go, I did that like 10 times. That's amazing. So now I want you to, this is a different kind of question. Are you aware of the pitfalls of your past? And are you repeating them? Or are you learning from them? Just think about that for a minute. I find sometimes, no matter how much I think I've changed, I realize how much I've stayed the same. I've been a journaler my whole life, so, you know, so many things are recorded, like since the time I was, you know, a teenager. And sometimes I'll look back and I go, wow, still me. Haven't changed that much. In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. And so that's okay, because it's just an opportunity to keep working on those parts that I'm repeating that aren't working out that well. So now I want you to ask yourself this, and ask yourself seriously, do you feel worthy of being loved? Like, really, do you feel worthy of being loved? Most of us don't take the time to even think about such a thing. But often if you dig down deep inside, you might find there's resistance to that idea. And if there's resistance to that idea, you're putting up roadblocks. You're preventing love the way you might want it, because you don't feel like you deserve it. In fact, you may even be sabotaging it sometimes. Because if you don't feel like you deserve it, you're not going to have it. You're going to make sure you don't have it. So that's kind of a fundamental. Do you see yourself as an equal to your partner, to significant people in your life? Or do you see yourself above or below? And I'm not talking about that, like, you know, there are legitimate things, like, you know, if you're talking to your child, chances are you have more wisdom and experience than your child does. So in that way, you're more advanced than your child. But as a human being, you're an equal. Their feelings, your feelings, everyone's feelings, they all count the same. No one's matters more or less. It's all important. And we all have areas where we feel superior. We all have areas where we feel inferior. And those are also things that create roadblocks to our getting the intimacy and love that we want. Can you respect and honor the needs, desires, and wishes of others, even if they challenge or conflict with yours? That's a tough one. If me not getting something is something I have to do so someone else is happy, that's okay sometimes. But if I'm doing it all the time, then I'm not looking after me. The biggest challenge for people, and some people believe that this is a definition of mental health, is being able to keep your needs in mind while also keeping the other person's needs in mind and finding a balance there. So a lot of times when we get in conflict, one or both people have got their needs up here and the other person's needs down there. If you're keeping both people's needs in mind at the same time, you're going to have a much more productive conversation and you're going to be much more likely to resolve your challenges. The last question I'm going to ask you is, do you expect others to consider your needs? Or do you overfocus on pleasing others? It's sort of the same thing, but the expectation piece is important because it's going to lead into the next thing that I'm going to tell you about. But the expectation thing is important because if you think about the quote I started with, you are the love you find. If I don't expect to be treated with respect, then I'm likely not going to be treated with respect. People have radar for your weakness, and they will target it. And that happens the most in relationships where we're close. And it's happening all unconsciously. It's not like a person sitting there going, oh, wow, she doesn't think she deserves to be respected, so I'm going to stomp all over her. It doesn't work like that. It's happening unconsciously. It's happening automatically. So it's really important that we have standards for how we expect to be treated and that we live them, that we're communicating them probably, if we believe them, without even saying them. I always tell people this example. I grew up in a house where nobody yelled. It's just, we weren't screamers. We were like, we always talked in very, very calm and reasonable tones with each other. We just understood that my parents would not tolerate that. And, you know, my father was a very gentle person. And my mother was like a very elegant, sort of reserved kind of person. And so that was just a standard in my house. So when I grew up and went out into the world, when people would yell, that would shock me. I was like, what are they doing? Like, why are they doing that? That's so weird. In fact, I'll just tell you this little story. When I first started working, I used to do home visits. And I went to this one family's house, and in those days, it was before cell phones were really popular, like it was the, it was the late 80s. And so, but they gave us these phones that we would take into these homes for safety. And they told us if a problem happens, you could use the phone. Okay? So I go into this house, and it was very, very dynamic family, and they were very expressive. And I'm sitting with two brothers who were having a conflict, and we were trying to work it out. And the older brother was standing there, and he starts flexing his hand, like into a fist, and they're yelling at each other. And I'm watching them, and I'm going, I'm wondering if this is like one of those times where maybe I want to use the phone. But I just wasn't really sure, you know, if this qualified, right? And so as I'm sitting there, the brother's hand is coming up, and I'm going, is he going to punch his brother? Like I couldn't conceive of what was about to happen. And he took his fist, and he punched it into the wall, and the plaster came crumbling down, and there was this hole. And so I'm going, oh my gosh, like he just like punched his hand in the wall. I could not believe what was going on. And so then the other brother goes, Dad, get the polyfiller. And I look around, and there were patches all So I thought, okay, for this family, this is normal. I don't need the phone. So anyway, but I use that example just as a classic sort of like my experience made that look horrific. But for them, you know, that wasn't bizarre at all. And actually, you know, I worked with that family for 2 years, and they were extremely loving, passionate people. They just were very excitable. So, so anyway, I just want to check how I'm doing time-wise. Where are we? So are you okay? Do you want me to continue a little bit here?
Yeah.
So I want you to, I'm going to leave you alone for a minute and have you stop reflecting on yourselves. And I just want to talk a little bit about the four main causes of conflict and relationship breakdown. The first one is criticism. And when I say criticism, I mean the violating type, not the constructive type. We are allowed to give feedback, of course not talking where we won't be heard, but we are allowed to give feedback, but not mean feedback. We're not allowed to give feedback that's going to hurt in a way that's mean. Sometimes constructive feedback does have to hurt, but I'm talking about not being mean. So criticism, which is mean, that erodes relationships, that erodes love, and it makes relationships unsafe, whether it's with a family member, a child, a partner. Mean criticism is not a good way to go if you want to build intimate, connected relationships. The second thing that causes conflict is expectations. Expectations are really important to think about, because what they say is that we suffer in relationship or in degree to where we're at with respect to what our expectations are. So if I expect my partner to show up every day with flowers at the end of the day, and he never does, then I'm not going to be a very happy person. Because my expectations are way out of proportion with the reality of my circumstances. Now, it's okay to give some constructive feedback around that, but then maybe I'm going to be told, also in a constructive way, that's not reasonable. It's not reasonable to expect me to do that every day. So expectations are a main cause of conflict. rejection. We often don't realize that little things that we do can make a person feel rejected. Not including them in something, walking out of the room in a disrespectful way, different things that we do that make people feel rejected. We have to be mindful of that, because that's a very significant cause of conflict. And now here's the one that we all do, that happens in every relationship, and it happens quietly and subtly. Cumulative annoyances. Those are the things that bug us about the other person, the clothes that don't go in the hamper, the classic top that doesn't go on the toothpaste. I have a thing, I can't stand it when people get to the end of a toilet paper thing and they don't replace it, or they'll just put it on top of the thing. Like, why couldn't you just pull the rung out, take the empty one off, put the new one on? But, you know, those are like the little cumulative annoyances that happen, and that they make us upset with each other, they make us resent each other, they make us frustrated. And managing those without nasty criticism can be really difficult sometimes. So you can also see that the four main causes of causes of conflict in relationships, criticism, expectations, rejection, and cumulative annoyances, they actually all interrelate. And so mostly when those things are, like, if I even just take the toilet paper thing, I obviously have an expectation that people should change that. So, you know, and then maybe that'll lead me to either criticizing in a not nice way or building up resentment, which is also obviously going to be destructive in a relationship. So, I'm sure a lot of you have heard this before. If I always do what I've always done, I'll always get what I've always got. It's a simple quote. I think it was written by Susan Jeffers, who wrote Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. I think it's something that we all do. We keep doing the same thing. I mean, it's also that Einstein's definition of insanity, keep doing the same thing and you expect a different result. That's what we do in our relationships. We keep showing up the same way and we keep expecting something different to happen. If you want something different to happen, then be the change you want to see. I think I'm just going to end with just a couple of quotes from Leo Buscaglia. I don't know if any of you ever read any Leo Buscaglia. They used to call him the love doctor. He's passed away, but he wrote really beautiful things about love. He said, "Change is the end result of all true learning. Love is always bestowed as a gift, freely, willingly, and without expectation." I love this part. "We don't love to be loved. We love to love." Mm-hmm. Very nice.